John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live at 710sports.com. On demand everywhere on the 710 Seattle Sports app. Now, John Clayton.
And joining us in the Venue Kings hotline is John Boyle from Seahawks.com. And, of course, mini camps starting today. 10 OTAs, not mini camp, but OTAs going on. So there'll be 10 coming up before the mini camp. And I don't know, John, it's like we were able to look at the rookies and be pretty impressed with the draft choices and all that. What things are you looking forward to seeing with the veterans?
You know, a lot of it is just kind of how the newness looks with, you know, some new guys and new positions, some changes. And then you mentioned the rookies. It's, you know, when it's fun to see them kind of thrown in with the veterans for the first time. Because, look, it's one thing to look great in a rookie minicamp when you're going against a bunch of fellow rookies and, you know, some of them tryout guys who aren't going to be on NFL rosters. It's entirely different to have to do it against NFL veterans. So it's kind of fun to see how those guys adjust to that to competition.
Yeah, and of course, it's going to be fun now to see the competition. Although, I guess, you know, with an OTA, it's hard to really get a gauge on the running backs. I mean, you go through and you look at the new running backs. Now, Penny looked very, very good in the rookie minicamp, but with no tackling and no extra hitting, you know, they kind of, you know, you don't get the full ride to see how they look. But clearly, you get to see some things with the offensive linemen. Not as much as you want. And I guess, you know, looking at DJ Fluker is going to be important. Looking at how Mike Solari works with Jermaine Ifedi and Ethan Posick, that's going to be a big part of what to watch over the 10 OTAs.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we're talking a new coordinator and new offensive line coach, so there's going to be some change there. And just, you know, how do things look a little different? Does Solari ask different things out of linemen? Does, you know, we haven't heard anything about a lot of position changes or anything, but you never know. He might want to tweak some things with where guys play. So just all those things, you know, it's kind of, there's, you know, training camp will tell us a lot more than this, but because this is our first real extended look at these guys and, you know, the closest thing to practice they've had since January, it's just fun to kind of see how it all comes together.
What do you see as far as the difference of Mike Solari's coaching on the offensive line compared to Tom Cable?
You know, it's way too early to really to tell based on what we've seen on the field, but just from what we've heard from Pete Carroll and from John Schneider, it does sound like there may be some more elements of power than what we've seen in the past. And, you know, there will still be film blocking, I'm sure, but just a little more variety in what they do. And certainly going and getting a guy like Fluker, just the type of player he is, would sort of lend itself to that. And you're talking a big, powerful guy who maybe doesn't move quite as well as some guards, but is, you know, as strong and big as they come.
Mm-hmm. And that's obviously the big thing that they want to enforce, is they want to be a physical running team. Also going to be interesting to see how Chris Carson looks, because, again, he did so well last year, and now he comes back from the injury and see where he goes. Because I still think you can't write him off as being the opening day starter.
Oh, for sure. I mean, he was pretty impressive last year, and unfortunately for him and for the team, he went down really with that injury. But, you know, I think people forget he was close to being back at the end of last season. So he is full go right now. He looks great from what limited we've seen of him, and you know, he's moving well. He's looking good. So yeah, I mean, obviously when a guy's a first round pick, they have high hopes for him, and they want Penny to be a big part of this offense. But as you said, I would not count Carson out at all in this competition.
No doubt, and it'd be also interesting to see how C.J. Procise. How do you kind of sum up of what you've seen when he's healthy with C.J. Procise?
I mean, it's spectacular when he's healthy. It's been disappointing both for him and his coaches and everybody involved that he just hasn't been able to stay on the field these past two seasons. I mean, you go back to the New Orleans game his rookie year, New England, Philly, that will stretch midseason. He looked like the difference maker we've seen around the league. These, you know, versatile running backs, whether it's a Tyreek Hill type, or Kamara in New Orleans, just these guys who can be matchup nightmares and game changing players. And he's been that in brief spurts. But look, I mean, everyone knows, CJ included, that he's got to prove that he can be healthy and do it. And if he can, he could still be a big, big part of the offense, but it's just kind of him being available.
Mm-hmm. On defense, it'll be the first time to take a look at Barkevious Mingo and what he can add. What do you see and expect from him?
Yeah, I mean, you were there at the owners' meetings in March, and I mean, John Schneider talked about him as being one of their top free agent guys that they were excited about adding. And you know, I think it's, you know, I don't want to compare him as a player to Bruce Irvin, because that's, you know, they're different guys and different careers and all that. But that kind of role is what I think they would love for him to be able to do, is, you know, be a strong side linebacker on base packages, but then be a guy who can come in and nickel stuff and play in and rush a passer. And you know, that with Cliff Averill unfortunately not being able to play it, with Michael Bennett gone, pass rush is a big need for this team. So if Marquitas Mingo can kind of fill that dual role, it could be a big part of this defense.
Mm-hmm. And it's also going to be interesting to see the two defensive tackles brought over from Minnesota, because they're different in their styles. One's more of a run stopper. One has some pass rush. That's going to be a big element to see, you know, because those guys in some ways are filling some of the roles that are there for Michael Bennett, particularly on pass downs.
Yeah, you know, I think we'll see. It's the way Pete Carroll's described it. Shamar Stevens is kind of more the big run stopper type, maybe a base defensive tackle, and Jones can be a pass rusher. And yeah, I mean, you mentioned people think of Michael Bennett as an end, but he played a lot of snaps as a interior pass rusher as well. So if that's something that they can get out of Tom Johnson as well, that'll be big.
Mm-hmm. The receiving core, of course, a lot of things we have to kind of sort out there and look at, and you know, just to see how speedy is Marcus Johnson, and how Jerron Brown kind of fits into the offense. What type of things can we expect from those guys?
Yeah, I mean, that position group is looking pretty wide open to me. You know, we all know about Doug Baldwin, and he's one of the best in the business. And Tyler Lockett, I think, is going to potentially be in for kind of a big year with being fully healthy after battling through that injury last year to kind of get back on the field. But beyond those two, there's a lot of unknown. I mean, we've seen a little bit of Jerron Brown because he was in the division, so you know, he gives them a little bigger body. I think they would love to see Amara Darbo be a guy who can step into a bigger role this year. And you know, just beyond all that, it's we're talking about competition not just for roster spots, but really that third and fourth receiver role where there's a lot of snaps involved. So it's going to be a fun group to watch evolve all the way through training camp.
And of course, obviously, just how Russell Wilson looks in the Brian Schottenheimer offense.
Oh, for sure. I mean, we over and over when Pete Carroll's talked about the hiring of Schottenheimer, they pointed to his work with quarterbacks and him being really involved with the quarterback. So, you know, Russell hasn't been a great player in his career, but they still see room for growth in him, and they want to see him, you know, take another step forward. And they're hoping that some new voices and some different outlook from a new coach will help him get there.
Okay, well, John, I'll be looking forward to seeing you on Thursday. Of course, you'll be out there today, tomorrow, and, of course, enjoying the good weather and good football, because OTAs have begun.
Exactly. Thanks for having me, John, and we'll see you soon out here.
Okay, sounds good, John Boy. You can read him on Seahawks.com, and you can check out the show in the 710 Sports app, driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. And, of course, he joined us on the Venue Kings hotline. Coming up next, we will start taking out the grade book, so we'll start grading all the stuff going on in sports over the weekend. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to The Professor, John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
It's time for The Report Card with The Professor.
And, of course, we take the report card every day and grade the smart, the dumb, the accurate, the inaccurate, all the different things that are out there as far as some of the stuff that you hear, you see, and you watch as far as the sporting news. And, of course, what do we have, Mara, as far as our grade books as we take them out?
Well, we're going to start off with the Las Vegas Golden Knights becoming the second expansion team in the NHL, NBA, NFL, or MLB since 1960 to reach a championship series in their first season. The other team was the 1967-68 St. Louis Blues, but that was a time when the league had just 12 teams and 8 made the playoffs. So here's a little bit from their final game.
Barry, take us home. We're in the final 5 seconds of history.
Again, it's a great moment. I've been there, winning that game, going into the Stanley Cup final, something you remember the rest of your life. The last 10 seconds seems like it lasts forever. And the Vegas team is going on to the Stanley Cup final. It's unbelievable. It shouldn't have happened. This team is special. The group of guys are special. The organization is special.
What grade do you give them, the professor?
Oh, you have to give them an A. because it's just hardly ever happened. I mean, what, only two times in sports or two times in the NHL, an expansion team being able to do that, particularly in this day and age where usually it takes so many years to build up any kind of a roster. I mean, the league set it up so that they had the opportunity to go get a goaltender, which was so important, go get maybe the eighth or ninth best players on any team. That was good, and I just think it's just great to be able to see that success story. I think it's great for sports. I mean, also what's going to be interesting is now what's going to happen if they do win the Stanley Cup, because Vegas, not the city, but the betting community is going to lose so much money.
Yeah, I saw today if you made a $50 bet on them to make it to the Stanley Cup Finals, you can get $25,000.
Mm-hmm.
And they said Vegas is really going to have to pay out if they win everything.
Yeah, so isn't that kind of weird? It's like, here's a celebration, and of course, what is the staple of Vegas is that now they have to make some sacrifices, the sports books and all that, because, you didn't expect that. And again, if you caught Vegas cold like that, can you imagine what it is in the sports world overall? So, no, I think it's just a wonderful, wonderful story, and it's so good to see something like this happen.
This whole time, though, we've been kind of riding the excitement, thinking like, oh, this could get our hopes up that the Seattle team could be really good right off the bat, too. But I think now they've really set the bar high for the Seattle team.
Yeah, so it's like as good as it can be, don't be expecting a Stanley Cup championship in the first year, but expect a respectable team, because one, with Todd Lewicki, it's going to be run right. You know, it's going to be fan friendly, and as time goes on, it will be successful.
Yes, and the Golden Knights will play the winner of the Tampa Bay Lightning Washington Capitals series. The Lightning lead the series 3-2 with Game 6 tonight in Washington.
And by the way, who set up that Tampa Bay team on their turnaround at the beginning, and that was Todd Lewicki.
Very true. Who we have working on our team, so we're in good hands.
There you go. Okay, so what else do we have on the report card?
So you remember the comments that Josh Rosen made after the draft, saying that there were 9 mistakes made ahead of him? Mm-hmm. Baker Mayfield was asked about that at the NFLPA rookie premiere in L.A.
Josh Rosen made a lot of headlines after the draft where he said he felt like there were a lot of mistakes made by him not going number one overall, or not being, quarterbacks being drafted ahead of him. I was curious what your reaction was when you heard that quote.
To each their own. The fact that he could say there's 9 mistakes made ahead of him, how's he going to compare himself to a running back and linemen and defensive players that were picked in front of him? There's no comparison. I think everybody ended up where they're supposed to be. I get it. I get the competitive nature, but you don't want to be scripted like that.
Wow. Pretty good. Pretty good response. I mean, certainly we have to give Josh Rosen a D for his comments, because, again, it's like, oh, okay. It's almost like it's, kind of like Jim Mora trying to fix up all the comments he made about Josh Rosen. But, Baker Mayfield takes everything personal. But at least he was somewhat polite about this one. I think that was pretty good. So I give him a B for at least, addressing the subject and not being too adamantly bad about that, because, it's like he takes things so personal. He almost like has to write down all the new enemies he has. So at least he was a little bit civil about that part.
Yeah, but he got into it with Rosen. Our guy Mark Schlereth over some comments he made.
Oh yeah, that wasn't the only one. But Stink really got him good on that. Kind of put him down like a cockroach, like he got last week.
One thing I noticed,
so funny.
That was the artist.
For those who don't
endeavor.
Know, it's like. Yeah, at Sister Station in Denver, a cockroach got into the studio, and Mark Schlereth got on the ground and was able to find it and kill it.
Another thing I noticed when I looked into this Baker Mayfield story, Mary Kay Cabot, the longtime Browns reporter, started off her piece on this saying that Baker Mayfield doesn't want to be considered another mistake on the lake. I didn't know that they were called that. They're calling the long list of messed up quarterbacks in the Browns, they're calling them the mistakes on the lake.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that's always been the buzzword. Mistake on the lake has been, one of the standard things that has been there for so many years. I mean, that's what, they used to say some of that about the Indians and some of the failures with the Browns. But, yeah, I mean, that's not just the Browns quarterback. I mean, that's just been one of the things. When things go wrong in Cleveland, they just call it the mistake on the lake.
I did not know that. Mm-hmm. Well, next up we have, you know, Steph Curry was taking a lot of heat for his play in the first couple games of the Rockets-Warriors series. People thought maybe he was still hurt, but he definitely showed up last night scoring 35 points, 18 in the third quarter. And at one point he got pretty emotional and yelled, "This is my bleeping house." And it got caught on camera. Everyone could tell what he was saying. And I guess his mom wasn't too happy with him. A reporter asked him about that comment at the end of the game.
"They were about in the third quarter, and I'm paraphrasing that.
I blacked out.
So he claimed that he blacked out, but his mom still wasn't buying it. He said she already sent him two home videos showing him the clip and playing it back, telling him that he needed to have his mouth washed out with soap.
Well, if mom's mad at Steph, then I guess Steph has to get a D, because you don't want to anger mom. But I think that you can see, you know, the emotions that there. It's almost like the same stuff I think you saw last year with Kevin Durant, because Kevin Durant was taking all the heat that it's like, oh, yeah, you just come to a championship team, and if you don't win the championship, you're no good. I mean, because you come to a team that already has three superstars, you become the fourth superstar. If you can't win that championship, what's the use of you being there? And you saw how emotional he was, and of course Steph Curry taking his personal, that they were worried about the knee and the shooting for two games, and he pops in with 38 points and 18 points in the third quarter. It was great to see. And boy, the one thing I find fascinating about that whole series is that how good Golden State is at home and how bad the Rockets are on the road. I mean, the Rockets get outscored in the playoffs by about 8 to 9 points in road games. I think they're 1-4, and the Golden State Warriors they've not lost a home playoff game since 2016.
Yeah, in both series, same thing kind of for the Celtics. You can see that home court advantage is a big thing, because they don't do as well on the road either.
And so what else do we have?
Last up, we have in the MLB, invitations to the Home Run Derby won't go out for another month or so, but there's a lot of buzz about Shohei Ohtani being involved. He said, "I don't think I'm at that level yet. I'm honored to be in the conversation, though." And then Mike Socia said, "That's a player's decision. I'm sure there's going to be a lot of things that come into what a player decides, but it's always been the prerogative of a player if he wants to participate in things like that." How do you grade that? Because I'm just thinking, with him already being a two-way player, and I'm thinking of Aaron Judge, really declining after the Home Run Derby last year. Do you really want to put him out there to possibly tire himself out like that?
No, I think let's skip on the Home Run Derby. I mean, he deserves to be in the All-Star game. I think that's going to be enough. Let's not overwork him. Let's not overuse him. I think that let's take a pass on the Home Run Derby. So if he wants to do it, I think he takes a C. If he's willing to pass and accept it, then I give him an A, because I just think it's better to have him for the All-Star game and not overdo it with him. I mean, he's so important to both the Angels and the rest of the league. Let's not ruin things.
I agree. I think so. Should talk him out of that one. But that's it for grades today, Professor.
Okay, and you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up next, we take your text questions. So text us at 710-710. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.
John Clayton.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
On demand with the 710 Seattle Sports app.
Well, after a busy weekend where the NBA continues to have blowout type of games, but interesting drama as far as what team wins and does, but the games aren't that good. After a weekend, the Mariners had to have comebacks to be able to get 3 out of 4 against Detroit, with a lot of excitement with that team. We take your text questions, so text us at 710-710. Maura, what do we got?
All right. First up, we have the 206 says, "Professor, given Trey Flowers' size and speed, is it reasonable to think he can contribute at cornerback in year one?"
I think it is, yeah. I mean, it's a little different than, say, Richard Sherman, but there's a similarity there, because if he can pick up the footwork and all that stuff, if you go back to when Richard Sherman got the opportunity, Marcus Trufant was the starter, and he would probably take an injury to get Flowers out there. But if there is an injury and he gets the opportunity, then I think that he can take advantage of it. So, I think that it's reasonable to think that he can be on deck circle, and so far so good as far how he looks. I mean, you look at him, and again, to compare him to Richard Sherman is unfair because Richard is so accomplished, but to compare him as Richard Sherman as a rookie, I think there is a fair comparison. And I think that you can see from Pete Carroll, he's going to do everything humanly possible to make it right for him to be able to do some things as early as he possibly can. They don't need to rush him. You know, last year you kind of wondered, were they going to rush Shaquille Griffin? And they kind of, you know, took it step by step. And once he was ready, he was able to handle it. So now it wouldn't surprise me that Flowers, you know, does get a chance, you know, maybe by middle of the season to start contributing.
253 says, what are the odds DePoto goes after another starting pitcher before the trade deadline?
Oh, I think you can count on it now. I think that, you know, they've got the hole at the number five spot that they probably want to fill, see what they can have. They've got $11.8 million now that is saved from the 80-game suspension of Robinson Cano. It's just going to be, you know, the patience. And I'm sure that, you know, when you ask Jerry about that, he'll tell you how hard it is to find starting pitching. Because as he said last year, you know, it's a change in the game right now. You know, less good pitchers are going to be, you know, there because a lot of the players are now coming in as more position players, and so it's harder and harder to find the pitching. But, you know, it's interesting. I don't know if you saw Tampa Bay, what they're starting to do, what they do now because, you know, using their analytics, you know, they now have taken a Romo, a relief pitcher, and they'll start him in the first inning and then bring who's going to be the starting pitcher on in the second and third just to try to see, you know, that you take that first inning away and you try to get it so that you don't have it set up for that starting pitcher to be able to be beat up the third time around the order. So some interesting things going on with the pitching. But no, I think that he realizes they need one more pitcher and they'll try to find one.
206 asks, will the MLB ever develop an all-star contest for pitchers similar to the home run derby, maybe something like a fastest fastball contest?
No, I think that they'll stay away from that. I mean, again, you know, you want that. It's almost like a skills competition like in the NFL. But I think the one concern is that if you then put the pitchers out there throwing those 105-mile-an-hour fastballs, which we saw one pitcher do this weekend, what you worry about is that there's, you know, the chance of an injury. And I don't think anybody, you know, wants to send their ace, whether it's a guy in the bullpen or a starter out there, and risk that to injury. Because, again, you know how competitive it can get. I mean, you see it in the World Baseball Classic, and you saw the damage done to the Mariners, you know, because, again, guys came back hurt, and guys came back and, you know, weren't able to do things. I think that'd be too much of a risk. I would not want to have that.
425 says, do you think Procise could move to wide receiver?
No, I don't think so. I mean, because now what you're looking at is that, you know, he can maybe be a variety of that because, again, he has played wide receiver. He certainly did it at Notre Dame. But I think that at 230 pounds, he's more suited to be a running back. And, you know, again, the competition is going to be there. He's got the talent to be able to do it. He just needs the health to be able to just at least compete.
206 is asking about news over the weekend that Kansas City wants to be one of the next teams to have an NBA team as well. Does this hurt or help Seattle?
I don't think it plays into it at all because, remember, Kansas City put that arena up there with the idea of getting one, and, you know, it just didn't happen. I think what you can see is that, you know, this area now, particularly with what it was able to do with hockey, is going to have a distinct edge. I mean, the only thing that could help, I guess, in one way is if they do the expansion, and maybe that's the second expansion team. I guess that could maybe be the one thing, but I don't think they jump ahead of Seattle at all.
253 wants to know, who do you like more as a starter, Amara Darbo or Jaron Brown? Sorry, I can't talk right now.
Yeah, no, it's like, I mean, as a starter, it's Tyler Lockett, but as the number three, I think that Darbo, again, that's why I have to really look at Jaron Brown to see where he is in the mix, because he's obviously more experienced than Darbo, but I think there's a belief that Darbo can really come on and not have a breakout season, but have a decent season. I think Darbo has the edge, but again, that edge is meaningless because now this is the first day they've all been on the field together to see, you know, who can be better and who can win it. I mean, so it's open competition. I give the edge to Darbo, though.
775 wants to know, when are the Seahawks going to release Malik McDowell, or is he already? If not, why are they waiting?
I mean, there's no benefit right now in releasing him now, because then if you do it now, I mean, you can do the June 1st cap hit. But again, you know, a whole bunch of his contract, it's guaranteed, and I think they still want to fight it. If he gets released, I think it's going to be after June 1st, and maybe it could be as late as training camp. But, because past the physical, we'll have to see if there's some clauses in the contract. Because remember, if he did get guarantees, you know, do those guarantees apply if the injury that he suffered with the AT, with the auto vehicle, that still could maybe get some of that money back? So no, I think right now there's no hurry in letting him go. They've got $12 million of cap room and no real problems right now. So no rush to let him go. But no, he's not been released. He's still a member of the team.
The 360 says, JC, do you think John Ryan, a.k.a. the real MVP of the team, will be on the team this year, considering we drafted a great kicker?
Yeah, I do not. I think that John Ryan's going to get cut, because I think that Michael Dixon, they're so excited about the uniqueness of the things that he's able to bring, you know, the 65-yard kicks that he can do, the hang time. I mean, I know when at the mini camp, the rookie mini camp, Brian Snyder said that he had him have 65-yard kicks with 4.9 hang time. Now, again, you don't want to outkick your coverage, and he is so precise, and, you know, he has different things that he can do with the ball. I just think there's a uniqueness to Dixon, and, you know, they traded up in the fifth round to get him. I think they're going to keep him, and unfortunately that means John Ryan's going to go.
360 says, compare Cam C and Shaquem Griffin. Can Griff do it? I think they're asking if he can play safety like Cam Chancellor.
That's a lot to ask. I mean, can Griffin make the transition to be, at least according to what it was at the NFL Network, had him as the 75th best player in the league and a multi-all-pro and a guy that's that good? I mean, that's a lot to ask just to be able to make that transition. I think he can be a very good player. I think he can play safety. But, you know, I don't think you want to put him yet at that Cam Chancellor level.
360 wants to know how badly you think D. Gordon is hurt.
I think it's just a nagging injury with the toe, but he's able to fight through it because he's such a tough guy. But I know that Shannon Dreyer was saying at 10:30 that he was kind of limping around a little bit after the game, but he's out there every game. As I think that Scott Service has been real smart about trying to make sure that he gives him a little rest when he can. But he's a gutsy player, and he means so much to this team.
The 206 says, out of Le'Veon Bell, Ezekiel Elliott, and Saquon Barkley, start one, bench one, and trade one.
I think you start the Bell. I don't think you want to get rid of either of the running backs, but I think Ezekiel will have a better year this year, and Barkley, I think, has a chance for greatness and a great chance to maybe win the Rookie of the Year. So, you try to keep all three if you can. I mean, there's no way that you want to get rid of one, but Barkley, I think, has a little bit of an edge on Ezekiel.
360 wants to know where you think kickoffs will be starting next season.
I'm worried that they won't have any. I think they may still take him out of the game, which I think would be a major, major mistake. At least, we get to see this year, once they vote in the new rules package, how it's going to be, the transition and how it can work. At least now, they're going to probably set three returners back, which is going to be kind of interesting and fun to watch. But overall, I think what you're looking at is that this could be the last year of kickoff returns, which would be sad.
Very sad. 360 says, who do you think will be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers running back this year?
That's a good question. I think that we'll have to open competition, I guess, because now that Doug Martin's not there, I mean, they counted on him so much. And so, open for discussion, I guess you could say.
All right, that's it for text today, Professor.
Okay, and you can check out the show on the 710 Sports app. It's driven by your Puget Sound Acura dealer. Coming up, we chat with Dave Crosby.
You're listening to the Professor John Clayton.
Live from the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming through the 710 Sports app and on 710sports.com.
And joining us right now is Dave Crosby. And so, Dave, the celebration continues in Vegas. The bettors, the books may be losing a lot of money, but Vegas hockey fans have to be elated. They're now in the Stanley Cup Finals.
A 500-to-1 shot when the year started, John. A 500-to-1 shot. And, yes, a lot of people in Vegas bought a ticket on it. In fact, every casino, I read an article that said every casino's got at least one liability. So they're, a winning ticket for worth more than $25,000, which is, I think that'd be $50 bet. at 500-1 would be $25,000. So, and there's some that have a whole lot more of it. So it's, yes, the celebration is ongoing in Las Vegas, and disbelief as well is going on. This is really a remarkable achievement.
And just fun to watch. I mean, it's just been a blast to see all that. And I think it'll be great if Todd Lewicki's former team, Tampa Bay, can make the advance and see if they can be in the Stanley Cup Finals.
They would be a slight favorite over Vegas. Speaking of Vegas, if they make it, if it's Washington, Washington would be a slight underdog. Tampa's already won a championship, and they had a very good game the last time out. But that series is still a little too close to call. And that's the other advantage that Vegas gets, probably about a week to rest. And get healthy, although they are pretty healthy at this point in time, just having a magical postseason.
Yeah, but it's fun to watch. And, of course, the NBA continues along with...
Speaking of not fun to watch...
Oh, my... I mean, the games have been awful.
Awful, John. I made it a point this year, since I've pretty much boycotted the NBA and haven't watched it much, that to decide that if I'm going to... I'm going to still dislike it, I ought to know what it looks like. So I made an effort to watch the postseason this year. And the performance by Houston last night was, or yesterday, was absolutely abysmal. I mean, just talk about it, you know, call it whatever you want to call it. That's a team that completely quit. You lose by 41 points in a game like that, you are dogging it. You are quitting. And they did. And then, you know, likewise, the other series, I'm not going to accuse anyone of quitting in that, but there just haven't been any competitive, interesting games yet.
No, you're talking 20, 30-point games. And we saw some of that last year, but not to this extent.
Well, I didn't watch it very closely last year, but to this extent, yeah. I mean, the matchups are interesting, and series may go 6 or 7 games, both of them, but really uninteresting basketball, in my opinion, except for one exception yesterday in particular. LeBron James was played terrific and made some passes in that game, the likes of which we haven't seen since the glory days of Magic Johnson.
Yeah, but it was good to see Steph Curry bounce back and kind of get excited about his shooting, because again, everybody was starting to write him off a little bit, thinking that maybe the knee injury was causing him to play a little bit down. His shooting was off, particularly from long range, but he got hot yesterday and he showed it on the court.
Yeah, that was the concern, was knee injury. You know, nothing else was the real concern, and he had I think it was the second quarter, he just went completely off, and including his trademark shots, and made everyone kind of relax in Oakland. And I think that broke Houston's spirit as much as anything. But I still can't get over the fact of how listless they were, how little effort they put into it after they went down by about 20 in the second quarter. Just an abysmal effort by the Rockets. Abysmal.
No, really, really bad. And, they're not as good on the road. And I think you see where their problems are. They go on the road. I think what they're 1-4 on the road, and just not the same team. And I guess the Celtics are kind of the same way when they're a little bit on the road, too. And I guess when you're a team that's evolving as an NBA finalist, potential NBA finalist, I mean, you have to start to conquer those demons.
Well, the Celtics are a real young team in this particular playoff. They don't have their team leader, obviously, and then missing two of the guys they thought would be their veteran core, I guess is the way to put it. I mean, Gordon Hayward didn't play all year, but Kyrie Irving did. So not terribly surprising to see that happen to Boston. It's a difficult place. It's always difficult to play on the road. And you know, statistically speaking, with the unit they have right now, they're not a particularly good defensive team anyway. So Cleveland, by playing aggressively, was able to take advantage of that and really was never headed in that game.
And, of course, the Mariners showing some gutsy efforts with the comeback wins, some maybe not the prettiest. I mean, some games where you have to wait until the eighth inning to get the hitting going, but they got it going at the right time, and now they're 8 games above 500.
Well, and I mean, it's just, I mean, the series just pivoted on the comeback on Friday night. I mean, here they are looking like they're going to lose it. They're down 4-0, looking like they're going to lose their third in a row for the first time this year. Guarantee of not having the series win over Detroit that you did at Paxton going the next day, but capping just a miserable week, and instead they manage that comeback. Then Paxton goes the distance on Saturday, and then yesterday they give a whole bunch of guys a day off, put out a patchwork lineup that is completely shut down. I mean, getting no hit through 6 innings, and then get the key hits late and get the key win late, and that's the sort of thing that good teams do. And it's interesting now they got a matchup with Oakland over the next 3 days. Oakland, I don't know if you've noticed, John, they're 3 games over 500. They're 25-22. They're actually playing well this year, as the AL West continues to be one of the toughest divisions in baseball. The AL West and You know, the AL East, of course, has got the top two teams, but AL West has got three teams playing very well. So series with Oakland is going to be a challenging one for the Mariners.
It is, and that's the amazing part about the way this schedule has broken down for this team. And I think it's, you know, certainly the only teams that they've played with currently, and I say currently because it can change with a 500 team getting a win here or there, is that you know, the three teams in this division. Four teams in this division with winning records, and they've not now played it. You know, the Indians at some point had been above 500, but all the other teams they played have 500 or below.
Yeah, and that'll obviously balance itself out as time goes on. And there are only three teams in the West, by the way, that are above 500. Texas is still below. But the key is winning those series. And it's just it was an amazing turnaround from what it could have been and what it wound up being. Especially, I go back to that Friday night comeback as being pivotal. And then James Paxton giving the bullpen a rest, which they needed to go extra innings yesterday. Things finally, after just a terrible week of bad news, breaking the Mariners' way a little bit.
Yeah, and I thought that Brock and Salt brought up an interesting point, is that maybe there's a little bit of a changing of the guard on this team, where now some of the young players, the Gene Seguras, the Mitch Hanigers, James Paxton, you know, they're now starting to emerge as, you know, big-time players on a team that, you know, Robinson Cano, is, of course, he got the 80-game suspension. Felix is struggling with a 5.6 earned run average. You've got Nelson Cruz just all beat up right now, and now fourth in the team in home runs. But the young guys are really starting to emerge.
Well, if they hadn't emerged, this would already be a lost season. So, yes, it definitely is the case that they have emerged. And Haniger in particular had a huge weekend with the clutch home run yesterday, with the spectacular catch the other day. He is really blossoming into a star player. And that was a nice bonus from that trade, which you know, was really ideally for Segura in terms of a proven commodity, and Segura has lived up to all the hype, but Haniger is exceeded expectations, I think. I think they thought he was going to be a good player, but right now he's on pace to be an all-star player, which is maybe more than what they could have expected from him, but that's going to wind up going down. I saw Brock tweeted out as one of the better trades in Mariner history at this point in time, if it keeps going like this.
No question. Hey, what's on Bob Graz and Tom today?
We'll be talking Mariners. Also, Danny O'Neill will join us to talk a little bit about OTAs. You know, I'm thrilled about that, John.
I know. You love OTAs.
Nothing better than practice. Practice without pads,
baby. You'll be there Thursday.
Practice without pads.
Sign
me in. Now, we're actually off on Thursday. We're not going to be out there until next week because we got a day game on Thursday.
Oh, okay. Very good. And, of course, we'll be Bob and Graz and Tom coming up next. And, of course, I'll be back tomorrow at 10. It's the John Clayton Show on 710 ESPN Seattle.